From WBOI Fort Wayne.
From WBOI Studios in Fort Wayne, this is the I Am Immigrant, and I am Ahmed Abdelmajid. I am a Palestinian immigrant who has been donning the title of immigrant for the past 24 years of my life. I am interested in conversations around the immigrant experience, a conversation that we seem to be not having or we seem to be not knowing how to have. For this podcast series, I'm hoping that we have conversations with different immigrants about all that it entails to be an immigrant. Hey, everybody. This is Ahmed Abdelmajid, host and creator of the I Am Immigrant, and we are excited to be recording our second season of the I Am Immigrant. Katie has been gracious enough to produce and direct the second season as well. I guess I convinced her enough after season one to come back for a second run. So Katie, say hi to everybody.
Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to be back and that we get to do this again and that we actually get to be in studio and see each other. So
masked and socially distanced.
Masked and socially distanced, of course. And just connecting with each other a little bit more because I know it's been a year of feeling pretty disconnected from one another.
And I think a lot of people didn't realize that our first season was recorded pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. We did most, if not all, of the recordings before the actual spike in COVID cases in the United States. And since then, you and I haven't really met in person. We've talked a lot over the phone and over Zoom, but it's good to be back and it's good to be in the studio.
Yeah. And, we've adapted too. So today we get to be in studio. Some other times we might be recording someone over Zoom. So we'll just adapt.
Yeah. Especially as we're looking at expanding our geographic reach to outside of Indiana. And we have a few guests lined up that as far as the West Coast in Portland, and some as close as Chicago and other areas as we, again, try to learn more about the person behind the label, their lived experiences as immigrants in the United States, and what makes it such a unique and wonderful and at times challenging experience.
I'm really excited to be a part of this journey again.
Fantastic. Today, we are excited to be hosting someone who, over the past few months, I've called a friend, someone I've met actually over soccer, over a joint love of soccer, or I should say football, perhaps before he gives me the dirty look. Today in the studio with us is Joey. And Joey, I've always read your name, but never said it out loud, so I'm not going to butcher it. Could you introduce yourself to us, please?
You won't be the first to butcher, likely not the last. I was always told it was meant to be Sequalio, which...
I don't see an S in it, though.
No, Coalio.
Coalio.
Sorry, wearing a mask and being the first time in the radio studio, so I'm a bit... But yeah, it was, I think, due to the translation process and how it got translated from Ukrainian to English. The best I can ascertain is Ukrainians and Poles were kind of similar in the way they spoke. And so I just think that my name actually should be Kovalev or something like that, or maybe similar to Oleg's name that was on the previous season. But along the way, it just got butchered and W's got put in. And
there was a lot of W's in your last name that I was like, okay, I'm pausing here because I don't know. Is it Kwelu? Kwailau?
Yeah. So my entire life, it's just been this, yeah, you're talking about me, ain't you? When someone goes, Joseph, and but the ironic thing, it means Smithson.
It means Smithson.
Yeah.
In Ukrainian.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now, sorry, you mentioned Oleg, who we've hosted on season one, and he's from Ukraine. But obviously, your accent is a lot different, and I put accent in quotation mark.
Because... No, I guess I'm a lot of eyes in immigrants, because my granddad's on my dad's side was Ukrainian.
Okay.
And from what I understood was he had to leave the Ukraine after World War II and end up in Leicester, England, where I'm from, and had my dad, and then obviously my dad had me, and that's basically how I end up. And then I moved over here.
So your grandfather is Ukrainian.
Yeah.
Your dad moved to...
No, my dad's English. My dad's half Ukrainian. He was born in England. He was one of the first, I guess you'd call, hybrids.
I see.
Like my kids are, that half English, half American. Well, he was half English, half Ukrainian.
Okay. And you were born and raised in Leicester?
Yep.
In England?
Which is probably another thing you can't quite say when you say it.
It's Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester. When we won the league, all of a sudden people could say Leicester, which was great because I'm bringing football already into this. But 5 years ago, Leicester won the Premier League. And before that, everybody would look at Leicester and go, Leicester? And he'd be like, no, it's Leicester. It's like Lester Holt, the guy off the news. And they go, why is it spelled that way? I don't know. I was only born in 1981, not 81 BD or whenever before Christ is. So I'm from Leicester. And then obviously I moved over here.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey to the United States? When did you move here? Why? How?
So I guess it started in July 2007. Me and my first wife, we'd been talking, we'd visiting each other. She came over to England. I came over multiple times. And I really quite like the US and the relationship seems to be pretty good. So it was like, you know, let's give it a go. So July 2007, I got on a plane, the NWA, not the rap band, the former airline. And
I didn't know they had an airline.
Yeah, Dr. Dre flew the plane. He's very good at mixing beats and flying planes. But yeah, moved over here. Was married for a couple of years, but things just didn't seem right. There was something missing and we broke up. And of course, I got the connotations of you moved over here for a green card, blah, 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 all that kind of thing. And it was, that always amuses me because, dude, you know, I came from England where we have all the things that you have over here and we have a healthcare system. So I don't have to go thousands of dollars of debt if I got ill like I am now because I got ill in the USA. So yeah, moved over here, married my first wife. Broke up after 2 or 3 years. We tried, but it just wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. So natural thing, we broke up. Then I got seriously ill. I broke up with her. There was 4 years of just madness, misery, and fun. A lot of fun, but a lot of... For every high, there was an equal low. Mm-hmm. And I got seriously ill in about late 2013. And I got testicular cancer, which is not something is enjoyable, but I actually learned a lot about myself and grew a lot in myself. And then during just about as my lowest ever as I could be, my wife came along and I was on a dating website called Plenty of Fish. And the next day I'd planned to shut it down, but being on chemo, I had the energy to watch television and that was about it, not mess around with my iPad. Well, my iPad went off and it was a cute picture saying, do you want to talk? And I'd watched enough Catfish to be paranoid about this because I had an image of somebody not that was this picture saying to me, I'm going to get this person, you know, and it turned out to be my wife, my current wife. And then we moved to Fort Wayne I moved to Fort Wayne to move in with her after 6 months of dating. I don't know why it was so quick. A lot of people were, it's so quick. But it was in contrast to my previous marriage, everything felt right. And it felt like I don't want to sound derogatory towards my ex-wife, but it was, she made me feel complete.
I mean, yeah, it's natural. You didn't click. It didn't work out with one. And
so we just ended up, after 6 months moving in together, we told her parents and her family on like July 4th weekend, and her auntie went like full on 80s action movie. No. And it was just amusing. It was funny. But yeah, so we moved in together, got married in 2016. 2016 was a really good year, apart from one thing, but Leicester won the league. We got married. We went home to England, took my wife to England, which was, I think, a bit of a trip to her because she was like driving on the other side of the road.
It's always a scary experience to do that for the first time.
I was driving on the other side of the road with my left hand again after driving over here for so long. So occasionally I knew I was on the right side of the road, but I kept doing things that I would do over here, like dive to that side of the road. But I remember going down a country road and I got a manual. I insisted on having a manual car and flying down a country road and there was slow written on the road because there was a corner coming up. So I just threw it down again. She's like, use the brake. And I was like, gearbox. And then 2017, we had our first child because I was so worried about not being able to have kids after testicular cancer. But I went for the test and it's the only test I've ever aced in my life. We had a beautiful daughter. And then last year, just before COVID kicked in, we had our second.
Yeah, you have two beautiful children. I've met them, seen them running around the football field and
the eldest
soccer fields.
No, I get the question of where do you prefer living, which is kind of an idiocy in itself because it's like I was only 25 when I left. Mm. And so I didn't. I mean, 25 is still kind of old, but not old enough in my life experience. Like, for instance, I'd never lived on my own. I'd never done a lot of things that subsequently I did in the US. So really, I was born and I grew up in England, but I actually grew up as a human being in these states. Mm-hmm. So where do I prefer to live? That's always a silly question to me. It's like, I can't really answer that, you know, because now I've got my family, mm-hmm. my kids, my wife here. But everything that made me, bred me, is at home. in England.
You have a foundation there, but you have lived experiences here.
Yeah.
And you live, I understand, I came here when I was 18, but I grew up as a man, as a husband, as a professional, and all that. That's happened here. And those are completely different experiences than home. Yeah.
The person I would have been a lot different if I had stayed in England, which is something I think about a lot.
Mm.
You know, what would I probably been in the same company I worked at, because I worked in a potato chip factory, and I'd still probably been there now.
Mm.
Probably a lot fatter than, because they are my weakness.
Potato chips.
Yeah.
Now, are we talking about fries or are we talking about actual chips?
yeah. Another one of the translation problems.
So now with you say you mentioned your family and two beautiful girls that you have. Is that reigniting any sense of homesickness or something about, you know, seeing them grow up here versus the way you grew up? Do you think about, oh, I wish they had these experiences that I've had in Leicester?
I guess the only experience I wish we could have that we struggled to have over here. My dad didn't take me to many football matches, but to a football match.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 2016, we went to an NFL game. We went to an IU football game, American football, or hand egg, if you want to be derogatory. we went to a college basketball game. I think I might have went to two that year. And we went to a football game in England. We went to a rugby game in England. And of all those games or matches, my wife preferred the football match because there was more passion in it. There was the away fans. There was the songs. There was the pies. She loved the pies. The pies, I mean, I forgot about how good the pies were, but the pucker pies, if you ever go to a football match in England, you've got to get one. It's just, it's heaven in pastry. Not very keto friendly. But yeah, it was so, that would be about the only thing. And going to see my mum, because my mum came over just before we had the second one and before we had Evelyn, and she was over it and she loved it being around at Florence. Because Florence is, she was a typical 2.5-year-old, you know, into everything, loves everyone, loves everything, loves a cat, loves whatever TV show she watches.
Mm.
And she was just a bundle of love. And it kind of made me regret that, in that my mum never got that experience with her. She'd had it with my sister's kids.
Mm-hmm.
My sister's got three boys. And obviously my kid's not grown up with them. I mean, her kids are a lot older than mine. My sister's kids are... Her youngest is 8 years older than mine, so that there wouldn't have been that closeness, but there still would have been
still
cousins. Yeah. I mean, my eldest cousin was always, you know, he was always the, I idolized him in many ways because my grandma thought he was the greatest one, and I was always the one that had the Red Bull can on legs, basically. I was just everywhere, and he was the quite considered just nice kid. Like, yeah, that's John Paul. He's my kid, my grandson. No, that's Joey, my other one.
So, family relations that, you know, you're missing out on because of the distance.
I mean, it's great when we go home, but it's also bad because we have to go and see everyone. You know, we have to go and see, you know, Jane and whoever else and Cheryl and that's that part of Leicester. Then we have to go that part of Leicester to see my dad. And we have to go. My mum is now doesn't live in Leicester. She lives in the East Coast in the Mablethorpe.
Mm-hmm.
So now, which kind of spoils going home a little bit because I want 2 weeks in Leicester. I'm selfish. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Leicester's not Las Vegas, but to me, it's home. So everything about it is just, but yeah, you have to run around, go and see everyone. So it's not much of a holiday, but still being in England, it's still getting chips, still having a cup of tea all the time, you know, because that's one thing about England. Someone knows how to make a cup of tea. You move over here as a tea loving Englishman, somebody not knowing how to make a cup of tea is just like criminal offense to me.
So with the kids and as they're growing up, are you planning on or are you thinking about keeping that tie and relationship with England and for them to understand that?
Yeah, it's really important to me for them to, because with my granddad died really early for my dad. So he died 20 years before I was born.
Mm.
So my dad was brought up more as an Englishman than he ever was the Ukrainian. We had this funny last name. And growing up in the 80s, we didn't know where Ukraine was. It was part of the Soviet Union at that point. Then all of a sudden in 91, it broke off. And then it was like, well, Dad, what's that? That's where my dad came from. Oh, okay. But what's that? And for a little time, I did try and learn the language. I did try and learn the culture, but I never really felt it in myself. I've always felt, despite my mixed heritage, that I'm English.
Mm-hmm.
England played the Ukraine in the European Championship in 2012. I felt no sorrow when England beat Ukraine. And I felt no, even when Ukraine got knocked out in the quarterfinals. And I was like, So another team got knocked out. But for my
which
daughter,
is huge to say for a football fan. That,
yeah. But know. Yeah, like if England get knocked out, good grief. Don't just leave me alone for a couple of days, please. Yeah, for my daughters, they're not going to be English.
Mm.
And one of the silliest questions that I will get is, do you think they'll talk in your language, your accent? And I kind of look at them like, why? Why do you even think that? So I get asked that question. And I pull the silly faces and walk off. But yeah, it's really important for my kids to know where I'm from,
mm-hmm.
what football team to support, because if they grow up Liverpool fans, I'm disowning them. Just little things like that. What makes me tick? What our humor? English humor is a lot different from American humor. That's one thing that really separates the two countries. Yeah, a lot of us are white. A lot of us talk the same, similar language, but the humor is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch American sitcoms, and it's nothing against American sitcoms. It's just, it doesn't flow. You can't, like, my wife used to watch.
I think Americans might say the same thing about British sitcoms.
I'm sure they do, but.
But it's culturally influenced and informed. And
there was a show called The Royal Family, which a lot of people in England didn't like, but it was so, and it wasn't based on the royal family. It was the name Royal, R-O-Y-L-E. And a lot of people didn't like that because it was so northern. If they were southern, they didn't like it. Southern English, they didn't like it. But if they were anywhere above Leicester, I guess, they would kind of like it. And I loved it. I thought it was brilliant because it was so representative of my upbringing, how the dad was, how my dad was, how the mum was. Yeah, so the humor is a big thing. My wife gets my humor, but there are times where she just says, really? And just gives me the Roger Moore eyebrow.
And your wife is from?
Yeah, my wife's Fort Wayne, born and bred. She's probably only lived like 5 miles radius. Like there's one side of South Anthony to the down the other side of Fort Wayne. That's about it.
Gotcha.
Which is nothing wrong with that. It's just the way she's been.
Do you find, are there cultural, not clashes, but cultural differences that come into the household or in the way that you want to raise the kids, or things that you hold of value that she might not value?
That's one thing I'll say about my wife. She's really been the perfect immigrant's wife.
Okay. How so?
My first wife would always try and like say, well, not try and get me to do things or say I should do things in a certain way and maybe mock me for certain things. Like we see aluminium. And
I laugh because my wife and I watch a show called Grand Designs, and they talk about building. It's a kind of home and garden, and he says aluminium, and I'm like, I grew up saying the same the same way, but it's just a funny.
It's got two eyes. That's the thing that makes it different. We like the second eye. Apparently, Americans went, we're not saying that. Goodbye. Yeah. And she would have me in a room and say, listen to Joey say this. And I'd say it, and they'd all laugh at me. Or it wasn't like,
I gotcha. It's almost felt like you're a token in a way.
But Blair is not like that at all. She's been almost too accepting of me being foreign in many ways. During the World Cup, for instance, it was England were playing Sweden, and I had the telly on full blast. I think I was drinking at like 11 o'clock in the morning. I was singing the national anthem, bouncing around the living room. And she went, I'm going shopping. I was like, and I didn't know that. She'd just gone, she took the kid and went shopping. So she's been great in terms of accepting that, yeah, I'm not American. Mm-hmm. I don't do things. I swear a lot more than I think most people, even English people. And she's never really been bothered about that.
A couple of years into your move to the United States or early on, you had to go through this scary experience of testicular cancer and chemo and all that. How did you, it's a loaded question about feelings and emotions through that alone, but on top of it, add the fact that you're away from home and navigating that or balancing that, how much do you share with the family about what you're going through versus, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Is there that sense of guilt if I don't want them to feel sorry for me being far away?
No, both my grandparents on my mom's side died of cancer.
Sorry to hear that.
There's actually a song by The Verve called The Drugs Don't Work that came out really close to my grandma dying. So for a long time when I used to hear that song, it used to make me cry because the last time I ever seen my grandma, she was in pain, dying of cancer. So I found out I have cancer and I'm like, oh, I've got to tell my mom. And I had to be. And I didn't know it was, at the time we didn't know what it was. You know, I had to go to the doctors. I had to get poked in holes. I didn't know I had holes. I had to get touched in places another man had never touched me. It's a very humbling experience, testicular cancer, put it that way. And then eventually I was like, okay, we know it's cancer. I've got to then go back and tell my mum and dad and sister. And I told my sister first. I said, listen, don't tell mum, but this is going on. We think it's cancer. We don't know how bad. So I went through everything, got all the tests done and came back and it was like, well, I'll tell my mum. So I told my mum and it wasn't scary for me. I just approached it with the stereotypical stiff upper lip, you know, British stiff upper lip. It had to be done. What do I have to do? How do I do it? How do I get to where I'm getting? My cancer happened in two parts. I don't know if you know that. I had the lump on my testicle. So in March 2013, they took the testicle out. But I also had a CT scan, and that CT scan showed a lump, 11 millimeters in my chest because it had traveled up my lymph nodes.
Wow.
And that was the ticking time bomb that I didn't know about. Well, we knew about, we didn't know
that it traveled that
if
far.
It was going to go off or when it was going to go off, or indeed that was cancer, or if it was just something that... Well, we went out in November for my birthday because I'm born in November, and we had a great time, got drunk. It was probably one of the best nights out I'd had in Indiana since I'd moved over. It was a brilliant night. And then I'd gone for a scan the Thursday before, and I think the Monday after, I went to see the doctor. Because at that point, my surveillance periods were so close together. It was like every 3 months. So I went for the scan and he said, well, we've got some news to tell you. That lump in your chest had gone from 11 millimeters to 22 millimeters in 3 months.
Wow.
At that point, I felt like somebody had literally... I'm not religious at all. I don't believe in any God or, you know, apart from football. that's the only religion I believe in. But I felt literally like someone had just taken whatever soul I supposedly have and just ripped it out of me. I felt an out-of-body experience. It was awful. And at that point, that was the worst one, because then I had to go back and tell my mom again, listen, yeah, I'm not out of the woods. In fact, I'm back further in the woods. All I can see is trees at the moment. That was the scary one, because even then, as soon as I knew what to do, I was fine. I cried. I had some moments, and I still had the moments of doubts, but as soon as I knew what to do, I was fine. I got on with it. Just put
it in. Did you keep, is it calling the family every other night or?
My mum was calling me. My mum got a phone plan to call me quite a lot. But what happened then was I was on Sprint at the time, and Sprint, it started eating into my minutes. And Sprint was like, listen, if you don't stop calling each other, we're going to start charging you more. And I was like, mum, I love you calling me, but stop calling. And of course, mum being a highly emotional person, that caused a... So, yeah. And then we had the whole farce of the insurance issue. I had an insurance issue where 2 weeks before chemo, I got a phone call saying, have you got $7,000? And I'm like, no, I live in an apartment in Kendallville. That's not Las Vegas or LA. You know, that should be an indication of wealth. And they were going to deny me chemo.
Wow.
And somehow Parkview stepped in. They stepped in. They got me sorted. They helped me out. And they were great. They really were great. But the place I was meant to have chemo at were obnoxious. And I called the insurance company and I was like, what is going on here? It's like, they're right.
So why didn't you at that moment just pick up and say, I'm going back to England? Universal healthcare. I can be with family and be taken care of.
My mum wanted me to. Mm-hmm. This is going to sound stupid, but I was concerned about where my cats would go. And the thing is, one of the cats I was concerned about has just left and gone live next door because she didn't like Florence, my oldest daughter.
But so, I mean, on top of the health scare, it must have been emotionally traumatizing to go through that.
I don't want to sound Vulcan, but once I got over the crying stage, once I got over that part in the office, once I got to the point of, okay, this is what I have to do, this is what I can do, this is what I will do, and I think will was the big word, then I was fine. And I had so many people step up around me that didn't need to. I mean, I'm a bit of a hard nose at times. I can be a bit hard-headed. But a lot of people stepped up and a lot of people went above and beyond and helped me and showed me generosity that, especially in these times, we think doesn't exist anymore. But no, some people are absolutely brilliant. You know, people taking me to the hospital, people picking me up, giving me food. So there was a support system that weren't my family. And I had enough of a light at the end of the tunnel to know, okay, if I just do what I'm meant to do, if I just listen to the doctors, if I just take my time, I will get there. So there was kind of a solace in logic. Somebody said to me, I don't know how you're not losing your mind. And I was like, well, what good is that going to do me?
That concept of solace in logic, I like that. You mentioned that helped you through that rough patch in your life with chemo and all that. Is that how you approach life in general? Is that something that you realized about yourself after moving away from home and being an other in the country?
The solace and logic thing came out of just the situation. The situation dictated that I was ill, seriously ill. Not as ill as what a lot of people will be, but still, if I'd not done what I did, I would have died. So the solace and logic thing was purely dictated by the situation. Now, in times, I wish I had have used more of that saying, that ideological thinking, because sometimes I've reacted to some people that have made comments about me being English that are understandable because of their idiocy. Can I say that on the radio? I guess not a beep button or anything for that. Because, for instance, there was a guy who used to work with us, and he was the guy that thought he was funny. He was the guy that thought he had all the jokes. And, of course, we're having a meeting, and we had a sheet to sign to say that we were there and we attended. I was writing my name, and he turned to me and says, "Joe, remember to write in English and not that stuff that you talk." And a couple of my friends were sitting next to me, and they kind of went, "Did he just say that?" And I turn around, and obviously I am known for my profanity, but I turned to this guy and I said, "It's a good thing that I have health insurance, because what you've just said is so funny that my sides are just about to split. So I'm going to go to the doctors now and get them so back up." And this guy turned to me and said, "It's just a joke. It's just a joke." I said, "It's not though. It's not funny. It's boring. You're boring. Shut up." And I got in trouble for that. And I said, probably because I dropped a bomb of some sort. But I don't think I did. But I know my tone was very darkly.
But what irritated you about that? Why did that elicit such a response?
Hearing it for 13, 14 years.
So it's not an isolated incident.
No, this guy's not very funny at all. It'd been all right if it had been like, he'd known me for a couple of weeks. Then he'd be like, yeah. But after 2 or 3 years of knowing me, surely you'd figure out that that's not a good comment to make. But this guy was not either smart enough or was ignorant enough not to think to himself, "I probably shouldn't say that. Even though it might be funny, it probably might not be."
But you've obviously heard it, or it sounds like you've heard it from other people in other situations. And
because it's like, I love a joke, but it's just
gets old.
Yeah, it gets old. I mean, I guess you could kind of relate to it with you being a Muslim, you know, after 9/11. I can't imagine being a Muslim and living in the States, but just because of the connotations that might bring, because, you know, somebody's going to bring up 9/11 and that the trust is. And like, I've grown up around enough Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs to know that there's bad apples in every race, every color. But there's this certain amount of people that you'll meet that had this view, and it's just stuck onto that view. It's just the ridiculousness of it, you know, that people think you're going to laugh at everything, that people think it's all right to insult you because of the way you talk, the religion you... And we all have jokes, EJ, but this comes a point where it's like, all right, this is boring.
And there's an undertone with it too that connotes something more than just trying to get a laugh out of it.
I think certainly during the last 4 years, there's been a rise in the xenophobia in the last five, 6 years, so we say. There's been a certain rise in the allowable xenophobia. And being proud of your country, being patriotic is one thing. But straight up xenophobia is not a good thing. This country, from what everything that I've read and everything that I've viewed, has not been built on purely American-driven things. I mean, man was put on the moon by American, but it was a German guy running it. So, you know, this is a multicultural country. Get over it, you know. I'm sorry to go tree-hugging liberal again, but it's
a little far from it, but that's okay.
But then again, that's how you feel. You this whole last few years has been very... at times, you've almost thought, I don't want to talk because, you know, people's going to go, "American, I'm going to say something." And you're like, no, just don't.
Divisiveness or the one side or the other.
Yeah.
And we kind of lost that sense of connectedness. I mean, it didn't just happen over the past 5 or 6 years.
No, it didn't. I mean, you could see it during Obama. You could see it during Bush, really, as well. At times you'd come over and you'd hear things, you'd watch things. And then as long as you've got certain news outlets being so one way or so the other way, and there's no just news, you know, just tell me the news. I don't want your opinion, you know. Yeah. I'll perform my own opinion by you telling me the facts. And if my opinion's good, it's good. But at least it's my own opinion. I don't want regurgitation of your opinion.
So why continue to stay in the United States? Again, you have a good country, good passport. You can pick up the family and go back to England. Yet you stay here, and despite some major lows in health and life, what keeps you going and what kind of future do you see for your kids here?
For all that is bad about this country, there's a lot of brilliance. And my wife's family has accepted me, taking me in. Well, and to be fair, my first set of in-laws did. They were great people too. I do enjoy it here. Yeah, I can moan, but you know what? If I'd have stayed in England, I'd have been moaning about something in England, whether it be Boris Johnson. I'd been moaning about that idiot. But I laid roots. As much as it isn't home, it is home. I go home to England. We're in Leicester for a few weeks, a few days. And I'm loving this. By the end of the second week, I'm like, I miss my bed.
Can't wait to go home.
Yeah, I can't wait to go home. I just called America home. What's going on with me?
Can we talk about that just a little bit? Because that's a theme that I've experienced, I've seen repeated with a lot of immigrants, where you have that sense of nostalgia about where you grew up. But then you go there and a few days into it, you're like, okay, I can't wait to go back. It's a sense of purgatory in between, you know, where's home? How prominent is that in your day-to-day or in your life?
Have a feeling of being lost at times. I don't know if that makes sense. Because you belong here, but you also belong here.
Uh-huh.
So you're always fighting this battle of where do I belong?
Tell me more about that, because that's one thing that I don't think a lot of people understand. I think we've commented on before, but you mentioned it as lost. For me, it's walking a tightrope where I feel like sometimes a line of poetry in Arabic would toss me completely into this nostalgia about the Arabic language and speaking it every day and all of that. So tell me a little more about this sense of loss.
I think the tightrope analogy was great as well, because, you know, you're either lost or you're on that tightrope of, you know, over here I've got everything that made me, but now I've got everything that's become of me. If that I don't know if that Shakespearean or what, but home in Leicester, I've got my family, I've got my childhood friends. I got the things I used to do, places I used to enjoy, football, chips, beer.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned fish yet, but
I'm not actually a big fish person. Okay. I don't mind fish. It's got to be cod.
I was trying to be just another stereotypical person throwing it out there.
Nah, you were too clever with it. And things like cheese and onions, bread. English bread is so different to American bread. I don't know what it is. But things like that. But then over here, I've got my two daughters, and every day I wake up and my eldest is smiling at me and my youngest is screaming, because that's what one-year-olds do. No reason for screaming, but screaming she does. But that's where I belong. That's where I couldn't go home if they didn't come. And you walk in that tightrope of just being, okay, I love where I live. I enjoy where I live. I obviously do, because I stayed here. Even after the purgatory period, I stayed here. But I'm always conscious of the fact I am English. In England, they're playing in the World Cup. I've got my England shirt on. I've bought the latest England shirt. It's cost me more money than it should, but I'm still buying it and I'm still wearing it. And my wife's still looking at me, but it's like, you don't understand, because it did. And it's like, you just get that whole cacophony of confusion and mixture, but amazing, but love as well. And it's like a love of where I live, a love of my own country. But it's that tightrope you got to walk of being happy and being conscious of what you are and who you are. And I don't want to lose who I am. And I feel if I got off the tightrope or just let myself go to the American side and started saying ass and talking with a mid-Atlantic accent and saying Patty's Day instead of Paddy's Day and things like that, you know, I would go over. And that wouldn't be a bad thing, but that wouldn't be me. I feel intrinsically that I am English. I am an immigrant. I am proud to be American. I am proud to live here. But I've got to keep that side of me, and I want my children to grow knowing that there's another part of the world, there's another big part of them that isn't American.
We're at the hour mark. I have two quick things to kind of mention and hopefully close off with. One, you talk about enjoying and celebrating all aspects of who you are, the English, the American, the lived experiences. One of the things that came in earlier conversations is about that sense of grief, loss, or grief over lost things or things that you wouldn't have here that you had. Does that come into play for you? Or are you, do you find yourself at times, you know, grieving over not having what you had growing up?
Yeah, quite a lot.
Quite a lot?
Yeah. I mean, and it's just little things. I mean, when you say grief, I thought of, because the worst experience I've had probably was where one of my aunties died over here. And we just got into Florida and I got a phone call and I just had to leave people because I'm not very good with emotions. So I had to go away and cry. But the grief thing in terms of like things I've lost, there was a time that this, I'm sure there's things that you grew up with that you can't get here that you miss. And it's the same for me over here. Just silly things like pints of bitter. I always enjoyed a pint of bitter in England. And when we got home, straight to the pub, pint of bitter. Come over here and you're drinking a beer that's light and it's tasting weird and it's nice, but it's not beer at the same time. But it's not the beer I've grown up. And then going to the chippy and have a bag of chips and, you know, going to the football, people around you insisting it's actually called football, not soccer and things like that. Like, if you go to an NFL game, this is one thing that I think my wife pointed out to me that I never thought about. But our football grounds always have a section for the away fans.
Mm-hmm.
So it breeds tribalism, for good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And going to an NFL game, there's none of that. There's no songs. There's no derogatory songs. There's not.
There's no flames and throwing stuff.
Yeah, that happens more in the continent than it does in England. But there's little things like that.
Gotcha.
And it's not, I wouldn't say it's grief. It's just, and there is a nostalgia. And I think that's the best way to put it for me, nostalgia. There's a nostalgia of the life I once led.
We want to end up this episode with a final question of people who are listening. It's just you and the mic. What would you like to say and what would you like to share from the perspective, again, as an immigrant who's living, who's moved here? What word of advice or just general thing that you'd like to share?
I knew a guy moved over and he was a real nice guy, another English guy. And I said to him, listen, it's going to be this. You're going to miss your parents. You're going to miss little things, the grief, the things you classified as grief. You're going to miss that kind of thing. You're going to miss the going to the football. You're going to miss going to the cricket because he was a big cricket fan. You're going to miss going to whatever. Be patient. When you're fresh off the boat, airplane, however you go over it, things are, you're starry-eyed, you're walking around, go, oh my God, look at the size of that truck. You know, only one person drives that truck, not a whole army. What is going on here? You know, be patient. This is a different country to what we grew up in. They speak the same language. Sorry, I'm using they seems when you, especially when you're here, sorry. Americans speak the same languages, but it's not the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Be patient with people. People will earn patience. A lot of the time, there are ignorant people, like the person that told me to talk English or write in English. That guy didn't deserve patience, so I don't give him patience. But most people are good people in this country. Give them patience. No matter what their beliefs are, there are a lot of good people. There are bad people, but that's everywhere. And take time to adapt. Take time to do what you feel comfortable with. One of the best things for me since moving over was going out to the sports club. You know, being around different nationalities.
Fort Wayne Sports Club, we play. Actually, we have a game in about an hour.
Yeah. And find your group. Find your group of friends. And if you can, find a group of your own nationality. That always helped me. Helped me. In 2012, that was when I started meeting a lot of more English people. I'd met a couple before. Actually, the first couple I'd met actually helped me find jobs, which is a bit strange. Yeah, just be patient. The adaptation is not going to be instant. It's not going to be, oh, and here I am. I'm talking like an American. I've got a mid-Atlantic accent. My teeth are incredibly white. You know, I'm wearing flannel. You know, it's not going to happen. Just take your time, be patient, adjust, and realize that it's not easy. But what you're going through is natural. Because I think that's, we watch TV. I watched The Cosby Show when I was a kid. Because it was when we liked Bill Cosby. And it kind of painted an idyllic picture of America. You know, everyone lived in these big houses in New York. And it was like, wow, that looks great. You know, look at the little house we live in. Look at that. It's great. But then you realize when you move over it, no, things are a lot different. And you've got time to adjust. If you move like I did from a city to a country town, talk about fish out of water. I was like a whale out of water. But there was a lot of great times. And you find great moments if you just have a little patience. Which is not the easiest thing to do, especially not for me. Patience is the key, I believe. I mean, for you, your natural language isn't English. Mm-mm. So I don't know how you, for someone that doesn't speak English and speaking with an even thicker accent than say you would, or like Dennis, for instance, Dennis Italian accent, another guy from the sports club. He's very Italian still, and I don't know how that would have taken time to just for him.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was a bit easier other than the...
It's varying levels, but I think the interesting part is that you still experience certain things that immigrants in general, it's universal among immigrants, whether, you know, you're white speaking English still, but with a completely different accent or colloquialism and all that, yet you're experiencing that sense. And it's not specific to one or the other, and it's a varying degrees. And that's what we want to kind of get at, because a lot of the conversations around immigrant is just generic, general, so immigrant are this, immigrant are that. But to show the mind-boggling diversity and variety of the people that choose to make the United States home, and despite all of that, the universality in the feeling, the human feeling of homesickness, of grief, of stress, of all of that, and how it interplays at various levels, again, all in that effort to humanize the label, that there's a lot of person, there's a lot of emotion behind that label that we toss nonchalantly, or we throw out there to use as a hook to hang some of societal issues or ills on.
Yeah, some people definitely use it as a cross to bear to put on people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we have different ways of getting here, different motives of being here, different whatever for being here. But I don't think being an immigrant's a bad thing. It's definitely made me a better person, a more accepting person, because, you know, now, like when people ask me if I'm Australian or sometimes New Zealander, occasionally Danish, which is amazing. I've now developed I didn't know where you were from.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt it was, like, I might have said you were Egyptian. I don't know. But I felt that would be rude. So where are you from? You know, it's a simple, oh, you're this. No.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like...
Conversation for the sake of conversation. Yeah. Not to pass judgment, but just curiosity in the lived experience of another person is something that I feel we lost our way in how to talk about it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. The last few years, maybe 12, 13 years, we've seemed to have lost that. We're now divided. You're either this way or you're that way. There's no, oh, he's this, but he's also that. Or she's this, and she's a bit of this, but she's a bit of that. And sometimes this. And he's none of that, but he's definitely that. You know, you're either this or that now. And it's, mm-hmm. and we've lost that ability to communicate. A lot of the times you say something, oh, you're obviously this. You say something, you're obviously that. No.
Because labels are easy to toss around. Labels you don't expend the energy that it takes to get to know someone.
Yeah.
And, you know, we default to that, to just say, you know, whatever label, immigrant or political party, this political party, that, and it assumes a whole lot about you. But it's easier for the mind of the person who's throwing that label out there
I think it's part of the Twitter generation as well, because, you know, on Twitter originally it was only 140 characters, so you could only use a few words. And now people are used to reading now 240 characters. So now it's like they try and sum up everybody in 240 characters, whereas people are a lot more than 240 characters.
I think it's a shortcut that our brains are kind of wired to take in many different ways. But I don't think humanity would survive if we lose that sense of curiosity about each other. If we lose that sense of, you know, you have an accent that I'm not used to. Where are you from? You know, in having that conversation as opposed to, well, where are you from? Or, you know what I'm saying? The way in which the question is asked, the intent behind the question is lost, and a lot of times is becoming more to, for me to pigeonhole you or slot you in one versus the other, you know? And I think that's why a podcast like this and efforts like that are important, because we get beyond that. We get to know more about it. I mean, we connected over a shared love of soccer or football, but had we not struck conversations, we wouldn't be here today, or we wouldn't, you know, have our back and forth quips on on Facebook Messenger, the comments on this game or that. And I, you know, it's selfish of me, but I love the relationship that we've developed as friends. But that wouldn't have happened had we not struck a conversation about who we are as people. And I think that's where we're at today.
That's why I said, like, one of the best things I ever did was go out to the sports club.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've met so many people out there, so many different nations as well. nationalities that it's just been so different for us.
The I Am Immigrant is a production of WBOI Studios in Fort Wayne and is hosted by Ahmed Abdelmajid, who is also the creator of the show. Visit theianimmigrant.com to learn more about this season's guests and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. A big thanks to WBOI production assistant Steve Mullaney for editing today's show. This is co-producer Katie Anderson signing off until next time. Thanks for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.